This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:08 and you're listening to Top 5 at 5 with Sharad and Cam, and where we count down to the biggest stories of the day. First up,
number 5.
Ash clouds are disrupting local airspace.
Airlines have cancelled over 30 flights from Kuala Lumpur to Sabah and Sarawak as volcanic ash clouds from Mount Ruang in Indonesia pose serious risks to aircraft safety.
Now, according to Dato' Captain Norazam Mahmud, who is the CEO of the Civil Aviation Authority of Malaysia, ash clouds are at present up to about 55,000 feet in the air, and they're moving west at speeds of 30 knots or 55 kilometres per hour. Airports have been urged to monitor runways to prevent ash from disrupting ground operations as well.
Captain Norazam Mahmud warned that volcanic ash could cause severe damage to aircraft systems, leading to potential engine failure, reduced visibility and internal damage.
Now, the volcano first erupted once at about 9 p.m. on the 16th of April, and that was followed by four more eruptions, Cam. According to the Smithsonian Institute, the last time an eruption happened at Mount Ruang, it was over two decades ago, in 2002.
We should also point out Mount Ruang is off the northeast coast tip of Sulawesi.
Right. So off the biggest city, I guess, would be Manado in that part of Indonesia.
You know that part of Indonesia better than I do. Is it? Yes.
Yeah, it is indeed. Right. It is indeed. I checked the map. Right, I get very geeky about volcanic eruptions, Cam. I must confess this. Only because it just seems to be... it's theatre. It's the theatre of, the Earth still evolving.
Well, yeah, it's very exciting. I flew once to Bali and I flew past a volcano that was spewing ash. But the difference, and it wasn't in the newspapers. Nobody mentioned it at all. It's like, we shouldn't be here. But this ash cloud, though, it's a very large explosion. And the ash itself is the ash that goes very high. The lower down, the heavier pieces fall down. But when it gets really high, the ash becomes very fine indeed. And is extremely dangerous to aircraft. Can blow out the engine, can act like a sandblaster inside the engine. It has a lower boiling point than the engine itself, so it can actually get set on fire in the engine. It is devastatingly dangerous. And the only way to survive it is if it's caught in that, they don't even see it. It doesn't come up on their radars. They might see some thunder and lightning above it, and that's the only clue. And then after that, it's about gliding down and trying to reignite your engines.
Yeah, well... thanks for that very graphic description of what can go wrong if you fly into one of these ash clouds. Having serious implications for commercial airlines and I guess any kind of craft today. And the question will be, how long will this last? How long will flights be interrupted, right? So if you're in Sabah or parts of Kalimantan, how long will you be kind of bogged down? What kind of alternatives will you have if you want to come, say, for instance, from Sabah to the peninsula?
On the plus side, when it does settle, your earth will be very fertile. So yes,
okay.
That.
So if you're a farmer, you look out for that fertility. So tell us what you think of what's happening in Sabah and as a result of this volcanic eruption. If you have yourself had your travel plans interrupted, you can call 7733 2900 or send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Number 4.
Continuing the countdown to the top story is story 4, the passing of Tan Sri Joseph Kurup.
The former Sabah Deputy Chief Minister passed away yesterday due to heart complications after being unwell for a couple of months. He was 80 years old.
Now, he was known as one of the founding members of Parti Bersatu Sabah. Joseph Kurup was also Sabah's Deputy Chief Minister between the years 1986 to 1990 and again from 1994 to 1999. His last post, I think it's a federal post, was as National Unity Minister between 2013 and 2018. He was the Peng Xianan MP from the years 2008 to 2018, but he did not defend his seat in the 2018 general elections, opting instead to give way to his son, Arthur.
Arthur is the current Federal Deputy Minister of Agriculture and Food Security. Reflecting Joseph Kurup's seniority in Sabah politics, messages of condolences have poured in. So we reached out to Joseph Sipalan, the Asia correspondent to South China Morning Post, to get a sense of his legacy.
As a politician, he was quite pragmatic. Like many of his peers who defected from PBS in 94, his decision to form his own party was a necessary move to maintain his stature as a senior leader, while also saving himself from the Barisan National onslaught unleashed by then PM Mahathir Mohamad. The consequence of that move, though, taken in totality with many other parties that came up at that time, including UPCO and SAPP, for example, was that it fragmented the once solid Karazhan Dusun voting bloc, and there has not been a party since PBS that has managed to bring them back together.
That was Joseph Sipalan, Asia correspondent for the South China Morning Post. I think reminding us of that very important moment in, I think, Karazhan Dusun Murut nationalism or sub-regional nationalism. It was Joseph Kurup was from PBS, but then went on to form the party, Parti Bersatu Rakyat Sabah, PBRS. I think that's something that you'll see in many of the mentions in the media today.
I hope you're not turning to me on to talk about Sabah politics, Sharad, because it's a minefield.
Well, not mine either, you know. And, yeah, you know, having traveled there over the years, I must say it's so different from the dynamics that we have on the peninsula. And it takes a bit of, I think, for us in the peninsula and who have a very peninsula-centric view of the world, effort, you know, it's just about effort to understand just the ethnic and
geographical
complexities of the state of what we now rightly call a territory, and the way they figure things out in terms of politics and how different they are, say, not just from the peninsula, but say from Sarawak today. Mm. Now, if you have any thoughts, if you knew the man, you can call 7733-2900. You can send us a voice note or WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're continuing the countdown for Top 5 at 5, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:16 and you're listening to Top 5 at 5 with Sharad and Cam, where we count down to the biggest story of the day. We started off with volcanic ash disrupting local airspace, at a volcano in Indonesia, not in Malaysia, of course, and also the passing of Tan Sri Joseph Kurup and his legacy in Sabah. And now,
number 3.
Local film Mariam Pagi Kemalam bags 2 international awards.
The film, directed by Badrul Hisham Ismail, won the Most Original Film Award, while actress Sophia Jane received the Best Actress Award for her lead role as Mariam. This was at the 21st Asian Film Festival in Rome, Italy.
Yeah, and of course, all the more astounding for the kind of controversial reception it received only months ago in our own country, right? So just a bit about the film. I actually have seen it, Cam, myself, but I'll give a quick rundown. The film tells the story of Mariam, a 50-year-old art gallery owner from an aristocratic family, seeking to circumvent her father's refusal to bless her marriage to a young man from Sierra Leone. In doing so, she encounters not just the religious bureaucracy, but the prejudices of friends and larger society. And the story unfolds over the course of a single day, giving the title.
It had its world premiere at the Rotterdam International Film Festival in December last year, but may not see the light of day in local theatres. We reached out to film director Badrul Hisham Ismail himself to speak about what the award recognises in the film.
First off, I would like to say that it is very much a surprise to receive this award. We premiered the film more than a year ago, and I honestly thought that interest for the film had died down already by now. It is still quite flattering and a surprise that we still get asked to screen at festivals, let alone to be receiving any award. And I think, I mean, the title of the award sort of speaks for itself, I think. We got it for the most original film, which to me, it meant that these stories are still very much underrepresented. The story that we tell through the film is, you know, something that we have not told enough, that we have not shared enough. It is a unique Malaysian story, but for some reason it also have quite a strong resonance to people outside of the country, which is an interesting aspect, of course.
Now, Badru Hisham also spoke about Sophia Jane's win.
For the second award, which is for the best actress for Sophia, I mean, for me, that's truly just a testament of how strong she is as a leading actor. I mean, of course, the years of experience and just her presence and her ability to carry the character and carry the film. You know, the film wouldn't have been what it is if we didn't get Sophia as the title of the character. And I'm very happy for her. I mean, it's also a surprise that apparently this is her first award that she received for a film. I would have thought that she'd gotten a lot more before this. But, I mean, I'm really happy that she got this recognition. And I'm very happy to the people who worked for the film. I mean, I think it's important to tell unique stories. It's important to tell personal stories. It's how we learn about each other. And I think this recognition that we receive is truly because of that. It's because we are telling very personal stories. It's because we're telling very unique stories that other people want to hear about also.
That was film director Badrul Hisham Ismail. We also reached out to the film's executive producer, Mohamed Lutfi Hakim Mohamed Arif, to speak about the film's international reception.
We are definitely very pleased with the win at the Asian Film Festival in Italy, and also for the reception that we've received from international festivals across the globe and from the Malaysian diaspora, who have been very keen supporters for the film since it premiered in Rotterdam last year. I hope there'll be more opportunities to screen the film worldwide and even to new audiences in North America. And I hope that one day we will also have an environment in Malaysia that supports rather than suppresses creative and independent cinema. And we will be able to view films like Mariam in the country with no fear. Thank you.
That was executive producer Lutfi Hakim, kind of underscoring the fact that there is an atmosphere of, I don't know if it's quite fear, but I think caution when it comes to exploring issues that don't get the approval of either the conservative majority or of the bureaucracy, cultural bureaucracy. And, you know, and that's marred the ability of this film to be showed locally.
Having said that, there's a crop of movies that are coming out now that seem to be designed for streaming, online streaming. I've noticed that this film is already on Mubi, the website that's kind of curated films.
And it does, in fact, a lot of art house movies, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very art house movie. I mean, if let's say you're doing Police Evo 3, you're wanting the box office. That's where your money is, especially in the first week, is really crucial. This kind of film probably would live and die in a different way, and may not even necessarily get the kind of box office to pay back the bills.
What I understand, of course, is the film did get some government money and support, but it became the subject of, you know, the kind of continuing culture wars that we have in this country between conservatives against what they conceive of or frame as or label as liberals. And so the kind of explorations of an individual's journey doesn't conform to the kind of official narrative that some conservatives want, right, with regard to what the cultural, religious bureaucracy is, or what the conservative values are unassailable in terms of their logic or rationale, right? And so this film really pushes the envelope, but in a very, I must say, in a very gentle way and a very aesthetically pleasing way. It was quite a beautiful film to watch.
Well, you've seen it. I haven't. But the fact that there is a movie that has controversy, a Malaysian movie with controversy, is kind of becoming all too predictable. I think that's just the way it is, and it just sort of goes through the controversy department. But the thing also is that there's a desire, but that there's a need for with a lot of people just to have a moral parable. That's a movie, a story, as opposed to reflecting a reality that people actually experience. And it can be shocking to people that it isn't just this sort of virtuous parable.
Right. So in a sense, presenting models of virtue on screen rather than people who actually have moral dilemmas and struggle to address them. You're absolutely right. I don't know if this is going to be on one of those platforms like Mubi, which are uncensored. And in fact, if you have access to it, then basically the world's your oyster, isn't it? And you can go and bypass basically any kind of censorship regime that the country puts forward, or any country for that matter, absolutely. Right, today.
Yeah.
So, well, tell us what you think about this controversy. Is this a film that might interest you in the face of the kind of descriptions that we've given you? Do you want to see it? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Number two.
Now, continuing the countdown to the top story, at number two, a single mother is sentenced to whipping for Kalwat.
This happened in Terengganu, and it's the first time in history that a woman has been sentenced by the High Court there for the crime of Kalwat.
Right. So she was sentenced by the Terengganu Sharia High Court to six strokes of the cane and a 4,000 ringgit fine with a default of 8 months imprisonment. The sentence will be carried out on May the 6th if she fails in her appeal.
In handing down the sentence, the judge pointed out that she was a repeat offender and had not shown remorse. In 2018, she was convicted of a similar offence.
Now, Kalwat, a close proximity, is punishable under Section 31B of the amended Terengganu Sharia Criminal Offences Enactment 2022, which states that for the second and subsequent violations, the offender may face a maximum penalty of six strokes of the cane and a fine not exceeding 5,000 ringgit or imprisonment up to 3 years.
We reached out to Rosanna Issa, Executive Director of Sisters in Islam, for comment.
Sisters in Islam's stand on the issue of corporal whipping remains the same as before. We do not support whipping as a form of punishment, including for matters of private morality, even if the Sharia caning is milder, as was claimed in 2018. We note that this is not the first case of women being whipped in Terengganu. This has happened before in 2018. In 2024, we observe similar punishment was meted out to those who have committed Kalwat offences before. A man was sentenced earlier this year who was caught for the same offence last year for the first time. And the same is repeated for this particular case of the single mother. It is unclear if she was legally represented, but here is the conundrum. For a man and women, in the face of very limited resources in terms of time, network and money, those who are caught for Kalwat would probably think that this is the only option for them to plead guilty. Where is justice when there is no access to it for her to defend herself and her rights in the first place?
That was Rosanna Issa, Executive Director of Sisters in Islam. If you have any thoughts on this story or any of the other stories that we have presented so far, you can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're heading into our biggest story of the day on Top 5 at 5, BFM 89.9.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:38 and this is Top 5 at 5 with me, Sharad, and Cam, where we bring you the five biggest stories of the day. Now, a quick recap. Story 5 was about volcanic ash from Indonesia, from an eruption there, an amazing eruption that's disrupting airspace. We also had sadly, the passing of former Sabah Deputy Chief Minister Tan Sri Joseph Kurup and his legacy. We also had a story about a local film that's winning awards internationally. Of course, what's notable is that it was deeply controversial in this country, and it's very unclear whether this film will have a general release here. And also, we talked about the whipping sentence for a woman, the first offender in the section under Kalwat section in Terengganu. That was also a big story for us today. Now for our biggest story of the day.
Number one.
So the Employees Provident Fund, EPF, will see a restructuring of accounts for members under 55. The plans are expected to go live on May the 11th. So this is the third account. And the expectation is very simple. With this account, you can withdraw money at any time for any circumstance, right? So we know account one, you can't touch until you're 55. Account two always has been one that you could dip into, but you could dip into it only for specific reasons. So account three seems to be, I think a recognition cam that there are a lot of people that get cash trapped and in an emergency, in a pinch, they really need to find some savings. And this is an attempt to provide them with that.
Of course, the danger is that when you retire, then you've already taken that money out. So, and I think I cannot quite remember the statistics, but people are finding it very hard to survive in retirement. I myself have always been a freelancer, so actually EPF is not something I've ever had to contribute to. So it's a bit unknown territory for me.
Yeah, and I think what, in fact, a lot of people can do is that if they, even if they're not working for somebody, they could do that voluntary contribution, right? So you could have, even as a freelancer, contributed to EPF and benefited from the high dividends that they have generally given over all these years.
Oh, so now he tells me.
Yeah, you should have been listening to the news. Yeah. Listen to BFM. So just a quick recap on some of this. The old structure was 70% of your money and the money of your bosses went into account one, 30% was account two. The new structure is 75% for account one, slightly higher, 15% for account two, slightly lower, and 10% for account three. Now, we're going to be speaking to an economist from Bank Marmalat after this, but tell us what you think. Do you think account three is a good idea? Would you opt to have this account? Remember, you can call us 7733 2900. You can send us a voice note or WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. You're listening to Top 5 at 5, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
It's 5:42, and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharad and Cam. Our top story of the day is EPF's decision to change the structure of members' savings through the introduction of a third account. Now, to help us understand the implications of this, we have on the line Dr. Mohammad Afzal Nizam Abdul Rashid, Chief Economist at Bank Marmalat. Thank you so much, Nizam, for speaking to us.
Welcome.
Okay, first of all, what were your initial thoughts on the restructuring that was announced and the split in the contributions to each of the accounts?
Well, I think it's a delicate balancing act. On one hand, you want to ensure that EPF members would have more funds during their retirement. But at the same time, rising cost of living, along with salaries and wages, which are not really catching up with the prices. So I think that would leave our EPF members vulnerable to financial instability. So I think it's striking the right balance, like, between the needs for retirement and also meeting the current needs of the present situations.
So just to get you clear on what you're saying, is that you're actually in favor of this particular proposal?
Yeah, because I think the way I see it, the role of EPF itself is evolving. Yes, I think previously, let's say previous decade, we would only think EPF only meant for the retirement. But given the current circumstances, the current economic landscapes, whereby the income inequality, wealth inequality, and lack of savings, so I think there is a need for EPF to play their role on that part. So I think it's evolving role that requires EPF to be nimble in terms of their approach to make sure that our EPF members will remain sound in terms of their financial standing. So that's how I see things.
You may already have answered this, but EPF says that account three will act as a savings account that people can withdraw from any time. Could you talk about how this could benefit members and how this account might differ from an account that you could find in the marketplace?
Well, I think, of course, the greater details we have to wait from EPF in terms of how they would announce eventually. But the way I see it, I think learning from the past experience and learning from the past previous studies by institutions like Ben Nagar did say about 67%, most of the time, our society, we may not be able to come up with 1,000 ringgit whenever there is an emergency coming up. So based on these studies, based on this experience, I think this country would provide our EPF members as a lifeline in terms of meeting their basic expenses should they face any shortfall. And I think at least they have something to fall back on if there is if they face any difficulties to raise cash. So that offers them some form of flexibility, knowing that they have something on their plate for them to use and be able to pay whatever they need in terms of meeting their basic requirements.
So can I ask, you know, account two has some limits on the type of or reasons that you can withdraw money. Should account three have similar safeguards? Should there be constraints on members in terms of how they can use account three? And what kind of dangers might arise if, in fact, there are no parameters for withdrawal?
Sure. Well, I suppose there will be a cap being imposed in terms of account three, in terms of their ratio, and I think the ratio will be very, very minimal, and that will actually limit the impact on the how the EPF members will actually accumulate their savings for retirement. So on that note, I think the account one will remain have a sizable share in terms of the allocation of how they allocate the funds. So just a small portion that allows them to use for any purposes for the current needs. Yeah.
And the account two has dropped. Its returns have dropped from 30% to 15%. What impact do you think this will have?
Okay. Obviously, the way I see it, given that the flexibility accorded to a country, then I think EPF would need to allocate more in terms of the asset allocation, in terms of the money market instruments, because this money market instrument would serve as providing EPF the liquidity to meet all these withdrawal needs. So the shifting towards money market funds perhaps may have some impact, but I think learning from their past experience during the unconventional withdrawal schemes during the COVID-19, so I think learning from their past experience, I think that they should be able to navigate this situation more clearly, and perhaps they can better allocate in terms of their risk and return trade-off.
So you already signaled that you see the fund evolving, right? But there are people who already signaled that they think the direction is not a good one, that in fact it should stay the course in terms of a retirement fund. What do you make of this? I mean, is it going to... What do you make of the criticisms that have come out regarding the evolution of EPF?
Right. I think... in the past, we seldom heard about gig employments, those who are working on their own. But today's world, I think you can see that from the statistics, yeah, own account workers is rising close to 3 million at the moment. So obviously, there is a need for them to be covered under EPF scheme. And I think EPF did very well in terms of ensuring all these gig employees to be covered under EPF. So on that note, I think the EPF is responding to the surrounding. Obviously, this type of employees, their liquidity needs obviously differs from those who will be receiving steady paychecks. So on that note, I think this country would actually provide some flexibility, especially in the face of rising cost of living. So I think it's about responding to the current economic landscape.
There was a suggestion from economist Dr. Jeffrey Williams to raise account one to 80% and have 10% each in account two and three to protect long-term savings better and help address pensions inadequacy rates. What do you make of this suggestion?
Well, okay, at the end of the day, I think we need to look at the final announcement by EPF, whatever amount in terms of their ratio. But like I said in my earlier statements, I think account one is always primarily for retirement purposes, and therefore I think the share will continue to remain sizable. Whether it's 75%, 80%, I think it's still, I think, remain sizable, and therefore will ensure our members will be able to accumulate reasonably well in terms of meeting their retirement needs. Yeah.
So we understand that the account three is kind of an option that members will be given. They can opt in or they can choose not to do so. Correct me if I'm wrong. And if that's the case, what's your suggestion to savers and members of EPF? Who should have a third account and who shouldn't?
Well, I think when EPF announced these measures, it will be across the board. And I think at the same time, there will be some flexibility being given for those who are not in favor for this. I mean, they always can retain their funds. And I think if you can look at the demographic or the profile of the EPF members, it's quite varies. And we can see that the B40 account quite the largest share. I think total EPF members last year as of 31st December is about 16 million. B40 account about 6.4 million. So obviously, this particular group would be in favour, I suppose, in terms of this these new schemes. But for the T20, only account about 3.2 million. So on that note, perhaps this particular group would want to maintain their whatever share they have in terms of the meeting their retirement needs in the future.
So we've been asking you the questions, and based on our knowledge, you are the expert on this. You've said already that you're broadly in favour of this. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I think at the end of the day, like I said, EPF is responding to the current economic landscape. Now the onus is on the EPF members who are the recipient of this flexibility, and therefore I think the knowledge about or the awareness about the financial literacy is very critical. If they choose to be, not to spend wisely, then obviously they will be on the losing end. But if they, can make this account flexibility more favorably, I think it could actually benefit them entirely for them, yeah.
Nizam, before we let you go, in fact, there's a message here from Daniel who says that, and I'm going to just read the last part of it. He says, the critics, I guess, are well-heeled people who don't understand what the poor are facing. Do you agree that sometimes we don't put ourselves in the shoes of people who are struggling on a daily basis to even save money?
Yeah, I think there's a whole spectrum that we need to look at. And this particular aspect is just one spectrum, i.e. meeting their liquidity needs, meeting their basic expenditure needs. But of course, when we talk about the plight of the low-income groups, there's also an area to, for social outward mobility. That would require another different sets of policies, such as, education, entrepreneurships. So I think we need to see it from a collective policies that eventually would actually help them to be able to enjoy a better life at some point in the future.
Yeah. Nizam, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Yeah.
That was Dr. Mohammad Afsa Nizam Abdul Rashid, Chief Economist at Bank Muamalat. We've been talking about the new proposed scheme for EPF and the introduction of a third account. We, in fact, have several voice notes. This is from Roberto.
I'm contributing to EPF. I'm very happy with the distribution as it is right now. I am not sure if I can opt out of having my account three open. I don't want to have the temptation to know that I can withdraw a certain amount of money, as small or as big as it might be. Just having the temptation is going to make you take it. And I think that many people who are still even struggling will have it easy. Just as Cam said, when we reach retirement age, it won't be complete. So the struggle is going to be even bigger, not just for the person or the EPF holder, but for the family of the EPF holder. I don't know. I wish there is an opt-out to remain with only account one and account two.
Thank you so much, Roberto. I also am concerned about the question of temptation, right? The easy availability of this fund, if there are no parameters, then I think back and having been a long-term contributor that I might never have saved the money I saved if, in fact, those funds were not locked in. We do, in fact, have another voice note, and this is from Ravi.
We saw during COVID that many contributors just withdrew the money, whatever they could, out of their EPF money, right? And today you can see there's low saving rates amongst a high percentage of the contributors. Okay, people lack that financial literacy, understanding the compounding interest impact and so on and so forth to grow your, retirement nest. People just want to take out the money. I bet you, even if you count three, there's 100 ringgit. They probably want to take the money out. I know times are difficult. That's what you call EPF. It's a form of forced savings, just an insurance. Buying insurance to as a form of savings, right? So I really think this account three is ill-conceived and trying to bow to certain people's request. Oh, I want to withdraw money, withdraw money. All I can say is, badly thought of and ill-conceived. That's all I can say. But, we really need to teach and educate our people. A lot of people in Malaysia just lack basic financial literacy.
Thank you so much, Ravi Kumar, for that. Financial literacy, Cam.
Can I just say that perhaps EPF is something that's just become a habit for us, and it's become a sacred cow. And if we look back at the history of it, though, once upon a time, when the British were here, 55 was a mandatory retirement age. And people were generally then dead within 15 years of 55. Well, seriously. But now people are working way beyond 55. So we've blown past that line and living so much longer. Oh, it's not absolutely not unheard of for people to be living to 100. And so this particular kind of forced savings is actually not necessarily fit for purpose. And that really, if money was put into healthcare to be able to help older people, that might be the way to go.
Okay, that's a conversation. I think we need to have a fuller conversation. What's been very interesting is that since the announcement, there's been a lot of chatter, a lot of ink has been spilled on this story. We have actually a voice note also from Salim. Salim says, it would be more advisable if the money earned interest be entered into the third account. So he's saying interest earned on the first two accounts then become part of your third account. What do you think, Cam?
Yes. We're shoehorning different ideas into something which is perhaps not necessarily fit for purpose anymore.
That may be. I do think that Ravi Kumar, though, has a very interesting point when he says that, the whole point about, forced savings is it's just that.
Yeah.
That you are, and because of the compounding interest that you accrue, that in fact, the implications for you financially are dramatic. People don't see that. They don't see what the X amount that they have in their accounts today might be in 10 or 20 years. But by taking it out for whatever purpose, including ones that have to do with emergencies, are not advisable. I think that is where the conversation is. But this is something that we probably want to come back to again and again as this scheme is rolled out. So remember, you can always join us in the conversation. You can call 7733 2900, tweet us at BFM Radio, or send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at our U-Mobile number 018-789-8899.